Welcome to Star Wars Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SWB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. So the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just to go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. Or better yet, go over to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall and you can join the chat room there. It's a lot of, that's where most of our chat buddies these days hang out. So you can chat with them or chat with me. And because I keep an eye on the Twitch stream, which I co-broadcast onto Twitch. In addition to TalkShoe, no TalkShoe, I only do audio. Twitch, I do video. I don't try to do video to both TalkShoe and Twitch because I don't know how to do it. And I think it's kind of a waste of bandwidth, to be honest. And, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall @gmail.com. Also, you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me also at sfuoncall. Big surprise. And of course, my personal account is Paul Franz. That's PaulFranz. There's no T in that. And just a reminder that if you want to follow me, that's great. I'd love to have you follow me. Just a reminder that I'm an avid O's fan. I'm very happy to be a Catholic. And I might retweet like what the Pope says or something along those lines. And also, I love text. If any of those topics disinterest you or bother you, then don't follow me. And of course, if you want to follow the Franz Games account, that's my last account and I have that specifically for announcing things about what's happening at Franz Games, including Starfleet Warlord and SFB Online, of course, FedCom Online. Moving on, and of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Quick news from ADB. Steve Petrick has had his second cataract surgery, and that also went very well as the first. So he will be seeing much better than he has for, I'm willing to bet, years. And also, the May Federation Commander newsletter just went out, so you can go to federationcommander.com. There's a link there just for the current newsletter. Just click on that and you'll find it. They have questions about SFB and FedCom, and also some things for those of you who like F&E. They also have some questions and some blips and bleeps there about F&E. Moving on to the SFB Online tournament, Sapphire Star 11 tournament, 6 out of 8 Round 1 games are completed. That's very good. And including 2 out of the 4 Round 2 games are completed. Unfortunately, no Round 3 game can be completed because, guess what? Those Round 2 games, they're on opposite sides of the tree. So those two that have completed cannot move on to the 4th round, i.e. the finals, because their opponent have not gotten that far. And hopefully that seems to be going very quickly, and that is great to see. Moving onward to the SFB Online library, we have some updates from Frank. Frank has been busy fixing things for us. Thank you, Frank LeMay. You are definitely a godsend. And I know that, of course, that helps. It's kind of helping yourself as it is, because I know you also use those ships for your campaigns, and there are many campaigns, at least two that I know of, that are being run on SFB Online. I don't think they have websites at all. Actually, I need to talk to them to see if they do have websites, so at the very least I can announce it and have it so that people can follow them and definitely drum up interest for when they want to have new captains or possibly substitute captains, things like that that might help them overall and playing their campaign, because I'm sure the more the merrier when it comes to those things. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, SM Wiley, all pal friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me, of course. Without me, it wouldn't be much of a podcast, would it? And of course, we have Barry. Say hi, Barry.
Hello.
And Gary.
Barry, yeah.
Say hi, Gary.
Hello.
So, gentlemen, how are you doing this evening? Bad question.
No. Just long ass day at work. Long day at work.
Understood. Yeah, my work wasn't bad, which is good. The day with a long meeting. Well, actually, it was not that long; it was an hour long meeting. So,
meetings always are a pain in the ass.
Yeah, well, it depends. The important thing with any meeting is that you actually accomplish something. You know, you don't.
That's kind of.
Because you actually can accomplish things in meeting. The important thing is to recognize what you've accomplished, what you've decided through that meeting, and not leave it this kind of wishy-washy kind of thing. Hey, Chris. At least that's in my mind. But anyhow.
Yeah, meetings where you accomplish things is... Yeah, because the vast majority of meetings I've ever attended in my life, it's like there was no point. It's like there's a couple hours of my life there.
You'll never get back. Yeah. Understood. Fortunately, most of my meetings, we're on Zoom, but we don't have to actually turn on our cameras. You know, just voice only. So. Mm-hmm. That's why we've been doing it. Oh, okay. But anywho.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mind me there. I got sidetracked for a moment.
So, Paul, have you had a look at the playtest prax PDFs yet?
Crap. I did not. Dang. That was C5?
Playtest what?
Wait a minute.
So there was a discussion on the BBS a couple of weeks ago. Somebody was proposing a version of the Frax AFD had Plasmarax. And that basically led to a discussion about a plasma version of the Frax, which are called the Prax, I guess. Steve Cole basically posted in this month's Hailing Frequencies newsletter.
Oh, okay.
A series of extras, mm-hmm. which includes a sample. Now, it's a playtest one because Steve Petrick, I guess, once he gets back, congratulations to him for his recent eye surgery going well for both eyes. So, congratulations there.
Yeah.
Hopefully, everything continues to go well.
I didn't know he was going for surgery. It's going well.
Yeah, cataract surgery.
Yeah, so,
usually those are pretty. Those usually work out well.
Yeah. They're overall they're well done. It's the ideas.
Very good chance of a good project. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. But anyway, back to Gary.
So, once he gets back, he's going to have a look and bring the SSD at least up to regular SSD level. So the current one is just provisional. But there is basically a set of four PDFs. One of them is the SSD, the provisional one, as we just said. Another one is a ship card for Federation Commander. And another one is for Starmada. So there you go, Paul. And another one is for Occult
Doing
Arms.
Starmada.
So, I think there's one for Starmada and there's one for Occult Arms.
Okay.
As well.
I think I was wondering, I heard you say Starmada.
Oh, Starmada.
Yeah. No problem.
And so, yeah, there's those. And on the BBS, there's been discussions because next month or the month after, there's going to be a couple other Frax variants. So I think the next one they said is going to be called the Helix. And there was a correct guess basically saying that it was going to be Hellbores, you know, Hell for Hellbore, I guess. And then the one after that is going to be called the Slax. And there was a suggestion that it might be the Sartorians, like Steelcrackers, that's really, but it hasn't been confirmed one way or the other. But there's also a thread in that same portion of the BBS looking into potential other variants, alpha variants, I should say, because I did set up a thread for what the Macho C4 Empires would look like in Omega, but those variants would have to stay in that other thread. But yeah, so basically, in theory, like if there was any demand for it, then they could. Steve Paul was talking about doing a potential module C4F, which would be all about the Friends of the Frax, they would call them.
Yes, yes.
So,
I
thought it might be worth.
Yeah, the one thing that.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I just thought.
Yeah, I like the other possible Frax variants thread. See, we have. Seconding the Quacks, which is QWT based Frax. Karnax, of course, they have the DCs, DBs, and Heel Nippers. The Wax, the Webcasters, and Web Fist and Web Snares galore. Borax, turn mounted Mega Phasers, Phaser Cans, and Phaser Gs. The Pelax, an unholy combination of Frax and Prax. Carpeting the board with plasma and drones, Andrax, Andro-like Frax with TRs and this devs, and Anthrax, the Nightmares, Thelming and Andro alliance in one package. They'll webcast in front of you, Dizdev behind you, and riddle you with fissure holes from all directions at once.
Oh gosh!
Yeah, I like that message. That was.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So the only thing I was saying though that the one based on the Borak, I don't think it would need the phaser G's because the phaser cannon should be enough for that. So that would basically replace the side mounted phaser ones and drones with phaser cannons, because phaser cannons take up two central initiation officer mounts. So, and then for the front and back turrets, use the mega phasers for that. But there's also possible, I guess you could do the Etchalax, which would be PPDs in the front and back turrets, and then on the sides, you could give them the ISC style plasma F launchers as well.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. And then, of course, we have the Lyrax with ESGs, the Verax with the ion torpedoes and IPGs. The Plax, heavy plasma, and ESGs.
Oh, yeah.
I know. They ran a little crazy with some of this. But, yeah. And, of course, Gary mentions another option could be the Jinrax. Medium rail guns with 4.5 turrets and, like, rail guns, size class 4 and smaller. Yeah. I say the Irax.
Frickin' Frax, eh?
Well, the one thing you
actually liked the idea of the Frax. I really did. And to tell you the truth, the question is, would it have made more sense to design ships that way?
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer is yes. And to tell you the truth, if you look at, and I know it's completely different technology, but certainly sailing ships were broadside armament mm-hmm. for centuries. because it worked.
The Frax.
Well, I'm sure the Iridani would be happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, okay. Oh, what was it?
Who?
The Iridani, because their ships have the broadsiding focused energy views.
Oh, the Britannians.
Yeah.
The module CE4?
Yes, right. Yes, yes.
The Britannians?
Yes. Yeah.
What's that? You must admit, as you mentioned, the Britannians with a side, with everything basically going to the sides, is interesting tactically speaking,
yeah,
in my mind. Just because of tactically, it challenges you. Instead of basically you fire where you're traveling at, you can't fire where you're traveling at. You know, you have to go that way, and then you have to turn to get your weapons to bear.
No. It also means that you might want to have an oblique attack.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which, you know, is in a lot of cases in the oblique.
Which.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the advantage of an oblique attack is that you can, it changes the rate of closing and retreating.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives ships a lot more options.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And the thing is, you know, a blink attack is not just for the Klingons, you know, because a lot of times I would think you want to do some kind of an oblique attack for nothing else to save your shield number one. And then, as you also pointed out,
it's no longer as.
Go, Gary. Barry.
Your shield number one is no longer as important. You have many shields that can, so you have more shields that you can effectively fight behind.
Mm-hmm.
So that lengthens the amount of time your ship is viable for. That's a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm. That actually, you know what? There's one thing that just came to my mind that would be interesting, at least to me. The idea of Britannians, but instead of have the standard six shields, have it like the Andromedans, basically, you know, left side, right side shields. Then you know they'd be stronger. You know, they wouldn't be equivalent to adding up all the boxes. They could be stronger. But of course, if you drop that shield, that's half that arc is now available for someone to get internals on. You know, that's a disadvantage to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me that'd be kind of a neat idea.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because, you know, currently, yeah, we have some ships, you know, there are smaller ships. I think it's the skiffs, if I recall correctly, or the interceptors that have basically front half and rear half shields.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they're so small.
Right.
But no, there's no shields that take up left side, right side, which I think would make sense. Now, of course, you have the really weird issue in my mind, which is centerline front, centerline back, where basically you're hitting two shields. So in my mind, if you hit two shields, you're able to split it between both shields. So there's an advantage.
Yeah,
to have the front half and the left side and right side shield kind of thing, because you get basically you can double up the amount of shield you have directly forward and directly aft.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
As I said, I think it's a neat idea.
Arguments here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh yeah. Okay. Yes. For the Prax, Steve Cole did put one in the what they call it, extras. Yeah. Newsletter extras, which is it's a heavy cruiser, Prax heavy cruiser. With a what the heck is? Okay, I gotta look at that. Oh, okay. Well, they're giving the new ARC, which has never been used before, which is FPX and APX. And the reason why it has to be AP and FPX and APX
okay.
is because it's plasma. Which is so it's basically rear extended and forward extended and rear extended arcs. That's what it is. But it's for plasma.
Wow. That's a huge arc for plasma. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And from the looks of it, that actually goes a little further in that it goes out those hexes, the hex side, you know, the boundary between for the FPX between shield number 4 and shield number 3, shield number 5 and shield number 4. So that hex line right there, that's the dividing line. So it's even more extended than FX and RX.
Wow.
So, yeah. And that's what they have for plasma, you know. What the heck is that? That's weird. Sorry, it's something weird on that page where they have something. But anyway, so they have both a S and F with FPX and S and F with APX, and then the plasma D's on the side.
Good Lord, you're gonna do that for X's.
Yeah, so the idea being that, of course, most of your weaponry is facing on the sides, like the Frax have it.
Yeah. Well, FPX is still on the front. APX is
But you only have one S and one F. This is for heavy cruiser. So basically, it's simulating the way it would be for regular heavy cruiser. Regular heavy cruiser would have it so that you have like FP and maybe, FP arc for the two S's, and then maybe an LP RP for the F's, or left side, right side for the F's, you know. But you know, basically, his four plasma that is would be an arc for your target, and the only way to do the same thing in the Prax is to have it so that it's on the side, broadside as was pointed out.
Yeah.
Sure. Which actually makes
bear in mind that these are still provisional SSDs or ship cards as well, so it's possible that some of the arc stuff might get tidied up. By the time it shows up anywhere else.
Right.
So I guess if anyone has any questions about the Prax, now's the time to go on the BBS and ask questions. Speaking of which, Steve Cole did post a couple of preemptive question and answer Q&A things, because he was saying that the reason why the plasmids are L and R arc is so that people don't try to forward or back center line them, that they actually do launch to the sides.
Mm-hmm. Understood. To me, okay... I'm assuming that the Prax, and I've not actually looked at the Prax, are based off the Prax when it comes to the shields. So to me, it just seems odd that it seems like it has the standard arrangements when it comes to the shield. You know, the heaviest shield is shield number one. Then you have lighter shields on the sides. Yeah, I got that right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah. Both 2, 3, 5, and 6 all have 24 box shields. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
If you've got the Federation membership card, it should have the numbers already listed there.
Say again? I'm sorry.
And secondly, because remember, if you're looking at the ship, if you open up the ship card as well as the SSD, the ship cards usually tell you what the numbers are on there.
Hmm.
But also the color code helps too. But secondly, bear in mind that even with the regular fracs, you can still fire obliques on the, between the 1 and 6 and 1 and 2. So you can still basically fly like a sort of like a Klingon if you want to. But whether or not someone will do the same with the prax is another story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another thing to keep in mind is that historically, again, I go back to wet Navy ships, in the Age of Sail, the most vulnerable aspects for those ships were the bow and the stern. And if you could cross somebody's T, you could you did a lot more damage than if you went up against their broadside.
Mm-hmm.
And so your heaviest weapons were on the broadside, and you could take the most damage on the broadside. So ships tried their best to keep the other ship on their side and away from their bow and their stern, and try to get in front or behind the other ship, do the most damage.
Mm-hmm. Which
that's been
well, I think that that might be the kind of thing that's easier to do in a call to arms, because there's no stacking of ships in that game system. Like every ship has to be apart from each other.
Right.
So if you're flying, say, Irdani or Frax for that matter, then you can actually string out your ships in a certain way and try to cross the T if you want. And actually, just on a side note, Call to Arms is probably going to be the game where the Echelon tactic works best, because you have to have your ships not stacked so the ISC can actually fly their ships the way they're supposed to, because in SSB, like even in Fed Commander, there are certain rules against stacking, but they only affect seeking weapons. Sorry, they only affect direct fire weapons. Like technically, you can still do a seeker stack. And also in SSB, because the explosion strengths have been lowered so much, except for Juggernauts, there's little penalty for people doing a super stack. So it's like the current iteration of the rules. They work against the ISC in that sense, which is kind of unfair, I suppose, in the sense that it's not basically functioning the way it should, whatever. Although, if you say to somebody, you know, a hex is still 10,000 kilometers, so sure, there's plenty of ships can fit in it. But on the other hand, I don't know if it's really in the spirit of the universe, that, like in the spirit of the game as it was intended to be played, to have that sort of thing be the default. So, anyway. But, so I kind of think that that game system is probably would do better than FFB or even FedCom in terms of
and I would like to see that I saw the Echelon Tactics in Commander's Edition, said, oh, this is kind of neat, and I played a solitaire game to play test it out and said, this will never work, not the way the rules are written, because I understand why they did that, you know, because the PPB just didn't have the range to make the Echelon work. Even though it was a longer range weapon than anything else ever designed, what they needed to do was make the PPB a longer range, but not necessarily have a more myopic, but actually do less damage at shorter ranges. So it might have its 10 to 15 range might be where its maximum damage and maximum accuracy. In closer range, it would be less accurate and less damaging. Move all the range brackets out one, or two range brackets, but, you know. And if they had done that, and obviously to make that really work, you'd probably want to have a few less PPVs available. Well, maybe not.
So basically, you'd want a direct fire version of the Sigvarion seeking weapons.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, and I was thinking about the SIGs too. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Although, actually, when you think about it, the Probe Heats are in a similar situation because, I mean, the heats themselves drop off over range, but the target accentuator, it actually has its best to hit range, I think somewhere between 10 to 15 as well. So even before you launch the plasma, or if another ship launches the plasma and you're the one not firing the TA, you want to be within that sweet spot so that you can guide the accentuated heats in better. So there's still a bit of a dynamic in there too.
Yeah. Yeah, to tell you the truth, I've never played the Prober as a fleet, only as tournament, and I know that as tournament, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well...
I can't... Yeah, I can't tell you how it works as a fleet weapon.
Understood. And... Unfortunately, I don't know all the ships and the weapons and so forth, especially in the Omega and LMC, to do a good comparison. But I can easily imagine that there are some ships and weapons combination, which basically they're not meant to be lone ships. They're designed to have back, not just the ships themselves, but the whole ship philosophy.
Yeah, the whole fleet dynamic, yeah.
Yeah, it works better in a fleet context than it does as an individual context, for duels versus a fleet engagement.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah, there's a few of the empires have those kind of things, like... the Kolagar have a variant of their heavy cruiser that loads up on the antimatter cloud generators. And you can imagine those are useful if you're doing like a squadron or fleet battle against like maybe the Hypers or basically anyone who has a lot of fighters and that can draw tactical missiles or something. But in a duel, that ship would be tough. Mm-hmm. And similarly, the Chlorophons, they've got a variant of their heavy cruiser that stacks up on the Sporecasters. And again, as you can imagine, if you're trying to break up an enemy formation, actually, that's a good thing to use against the super stack is plant a bunch of spores in their way and then see what they do then. And or for that matter, if there's somebody's flying in a bunch of fighters or whatever, one of the Chlorophon escorts has a, I think there's something like 10 T-bombs that they can take. So basically, because it's kind of like the an alternate approach that the Fons have to try to deal with like seeking weapons and stuff from enemy ships. So yeah, but basically none of those variants are really designed to fly individually. But if you've got enough ships spare to do a larger engagement, then they become more force multiplier.
Yeah. Kind of like scouts are a force multiplier.
Right.
But nobody uses scouts, at least certainly not in tournament, because they'd be useless.
Right, exactly. I was trying to avoid talking about scouts and, more importantly, specific ships. For example, Maulers don't work well. And same for scouts. They're not both. Neither one are designed to be in combat. Well, at least combat by themselves. They're designed to be part of a fleet engagement. So,
except when you're going after the Andromedan Rapid Transit Network nodes, because you've got a ship like the Federation GSX or the Romulans in Module X1R, they've got an E variant. They've got an E variant of the Firehawk, which has the full weapon load of the standard Firehawk, plus the scout sensors, plus a flotilla of PFs. So you want to send that against a satellite base or anything else the Andromedas might have, and they might have a rough time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, agreed.
Yep. But of course, there's only a handful of circumstances where you'd want to have like a lone ship, or have to have it for that matter,
right,
that has both the special sensors and the firepower to do something when they get there. So.
Agreed. And even the ships you described, they're not really by themselves. Yes, they're by themselves, but in the case of the Romulan ship, you've got a flotilla of PFs, so it's not by itself per se. You know.
All right. Well, then you're not wrong. But then, if you look at the Federation, as I say, they're advanced galactic survey cruisers. Only one of them has a flotilla. A squadron of F-111s. Colin Powell, the GDX. But all the GDSXs, like the Sakharov and Einstein and stuff, they don't have any fighters. They say, well, you can use them if you want to, but historically they don't take them. So they would be lone ships that you would send out to search for the RTN if you want. So like the base ship would have 8 phaser ones, a pair of X-photons, and 4 X-drone launchers. So you can throw a bit of weight around once it gets there. There are a fair few X-batteries too, so you can, if it needs to, siphon off a bit from that, like while it's keeping high speed. Because the thing about the Andros is that because their bases don't have phaser fours, you can maintain a distance from them while still being engaged.
But still, to me, makes no sense why the Andromedan bases didn't have heavier phasers. You know. But I understand the phaser twos on the Andromedan ships aren't really phaser twos. There's a close assimilation to a phaser two.
Right.
As it is, I'm watching the.
Everybody got quiet, eh?
No, I'm looking at the chat room, and the chat room is discussing doing a solo combat against a planet crusher, and one way of learning. In this case, who was it that's saying they're learning a new weapon this way? Scrolling back a little bit here, guys. New weapon there. I just had it. Dang it. There's Iggy. Says, when I'm learning a new weapon, I try it against the PC, i.e. the Planet Crusher. So.
Well, how far along is the Planet Crusher?
Okay. Barry, what was that?
How far off axis can the Planet Crusher shoot? Because if you're fighting, because its own neutronium armor prevents it from shooting too far off axis, and if your weapons emitters are at an arc that it can hit you, you should be able to hit it if you shoot at its weapons.
Right.
Yeah.
Be honest, I don't remember the weapons of the Planet Crusher. So anyway, so Gary, what did you want to say?
It was an anti-proton beam. It was an anti-proton beam.
Okay.
I think it's modeled as a phaser four, though.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of the Starfleet battles. I was thinking about the. And to tell you the truth, I've never seen the monster description in Starfleet Battles. Or was that? Or I don't remember it. But I do remember the TV episode, and it was Anthony. They said, it's Mr. Spock. They're shooting an anti-proton beam.
Oh, understood, understood.
And it had another weapon. It had a weapon that on your warp engines didn't do any damage. It just turned them off. Warp in your matter and antimatter wouldn't react.
I didn't remember that.
Actually, Paul, if you have a look in the commander circle for Fed Commander, I'm pretty sure that there's a low toner version of the ship card for the Planet Crusher, because in FFC, small monsters are given specific ship cards rather than just descriptions. So I think in FFB, it's only certain monsters like the Juggernauts get SSDs, and everything else just gets a description. But in FC, they give you the actual ship card if there is one to be had. So if you want to look it up, you should be able to find it on there.
Well, what did the now did they describe the Planet Crusher? Did it have that warp nullifier? Because I know that was in the TV episode. That's one of the problems that the Enterprise had, was that warp engine shut down. It just didn't work. We're stuck with impulse. It actually had three things. It had a big ass tractor beam that was probably long range as hell. It had the anti-proton beam. It had the neutronium armor, and it had the warp nullifier, which meant that you were basically running on impulse and APRs and batteries. Warp engines weren't generating any power. And yeah, without warp power, you're not firing photons. I don't know that it wouldn't turn off your auxiliary warp reactors. Probably would.
So I guess
Which would put the
if you're
Federation at a huge disadvantage.
Okay, what were you gonna say,
But
Gary?
I was just thinking
About
that. Oh no. So yeah, just Paul, I don't know if you're having a look for the. Because I think if you go to the Commander Circle, there's a page with a PDF that has an A to Z list of all the ship cards that have ever been released for Fed Commander up to CL-54 or 53 maybe. And it tells you where they are, because some of them, if they're in a communicator, it'll tell you if they're which communicator they're in, and others will tell you like which product you'll or Kraken you'll find them in. So if you can find that master list, and if you scroll down to the monsters, you should be able to see which communique issue to look for to find the planet killer.
Okay. Now, in the communique, do they have a description of all the rules for it? Because I'm sure it's got special rules or.
Some of the monster rules are in. So, for example, if there's like an FC product that introduced the laminated ship card version of that monster, then there might be certain rules for in that box set. But others, you should be able to see them. Like they're fairly self-contained or whatever. I'm trying to think now, because there's a couple of the Juggernaut Empire ships have got ship cards. But I mean, there are certain rules that they've introduced for that in terms of things like the Shriek missiles and stuff. But although, of course, I do hope that one day they might continue the process of turning the Juggernauts into a proper empire, like the way the Andromedas are, instead of having them just as random monsters.
Right.
But
Oh, that would be cool. That would be cool.
because there's already a bunch of the various Juggernaut miniatures on Shapeways, like from the frigate up to the battleship. To go with the SSDs that they've released over time. So, in principle, you could
Now,
do a similar layout.
the original Juggernaut, that was their battleship.
It was considered to be a dreadnought. So the battleship is
Oh, so
even
the
bigger
battle.
still.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's something like 768 points.
Good Lord.
Nice communic the
And
fleet of
about how powerful is their frigate?
The frigate's only got like a single phaser 4 on the front. It's pretty weak. So basically once you start kicking up the higher notches, that the weapons get pretty the ships get pretty powerful. And actually, if you are you on your computer as well, Barry?
No, I'm not.
Because if you get a chance later on to have a look back on that Shapeways site, you can actually go and look under the Juggernaut heading, and you'll be able to see the 3D models for the various miniatures, including there's a missile variant of the Dreadnought, and it actually has like silos because the cargo boxes are replaced with silos for 18 Shriek missiles. And a Shriek missile is basically like a gigantic drone-like weapon that ordinary Juggernaut ships from Beta onwards can swap one for one with their shuttles.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know Juggernauts had shuttles.
Yeah. Didn't they turn them into like these basically I was saying nuclear, you know, floating nuclear space mines, but that's not quite right. Dang it. I want to say Shrieks, but I know they're not Shrieks. I remember reading about it, where basically they took the shuttles that were on it and did something with them. I forget what the computer that are running the Juggernaut created.
Yeah, the Shrieks are built by disassembling the admin shuttles and turning them into like replacing them with a giant seeking weapon.
Right.
Like, I think it does something like 35 points on impact.
Okay, so it was Shrieks. Okay, I did remember it right.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I have like a 3 a.m. wake up, so I need to get to bed.
Okay. Good night, Gary. Barry.
Okay, see ya.
Bye. Hate when I do that. Okay. But yeah, thank you, Chris. The Planet Killer is on Communicate number 31. For those interested, go here. Don't mind me. There. This does the fleet scale. They actually have the squadron scale as part of one of the card packs. And actually, I know I have that card. It's probably all the way over there on the floor, because actually I currently have all the cards. But yeah, it has the two for the fleet version. It has two phaser fours and then a few phaser threes. Mostly armor, which I assume, I'm not sure. Okay. I don't see any special rules for it, though. I just want to check to see if in the actual newsletter does it have anything special. No, I don't think anything. Nope. Yeah. There's nothing special. So I was wondering if the armor itself was directional. You know, in other words, the right side armor, you only get hit if you're on the right side and so forth. And left side, right, left side, you know, that kind of thing. But it looks like it's just, you know, overall armor. So it means you have to destroy all the armor to get through to the ooey gooey goodness. Forward hull, reactor, systems, and yeah. There's even some armor near the tail of the SSD. Yeah, it doesn't have any markings. Which kind of makes sense when it comes to Federation Commander, that they want to have it so that it's simplified as possible. There.
We also I actually think that ADB did a more interesting job with the Juggernauts than any of the kind of imported monsters from the Tri-Video would be, because I think that those are much more interesting like starship designs.
Right.
Like technology mix-ups.
Agreed. One of the things I still like is the Andromedans on the front of the was it C4 something? What's C4? The conjectural Andromedans, you know.
Oh, C3A.
C3A. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the one of the X ships, the conjectural ones, which also are on Shapeways as well. Although there's no X Intruder on Shapeways, but there is an X Conquistador. So if you want to have a look at it, you can see it there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the way that ship is designed. It looks more modern and better than the classic Andromedan ships, in my mind, anyway. At least when it comes to the look of them, you know.
Oh, actually, Paul, there was something I had in mind recently. I was just curious about your thoughts on it. It was to do with gunboats.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't recall if you recall, but that's the right way to put it. You might be aware that the way in which the gunboats work is very different depending on which setting you're in. So, for example, the regular Alpha gunboats just have like the smaller engines, but you can put more booster packs on them.
Right.
But then if you're owning the packs, then the engines are more liable to get damaged. And so in Federation Commander, they've got a few playtest gunboats, and what they're going to do is they're going to remove the warp booster packs, but they're going to cut the movement rate from 1/5 down to 1/8.
Right.
So, but on the other hand, and then, of course, you've got like the Andromedan mobile weapon platforms, which are kind of like pseudo interceptors. But then in module C3A, there's actually a set of conjectural Adder PFs for the Andros. And those are a bit bigger and more powerful. But that was actually a suggestion in there is still a plan to introduce gunboats to Federation Commander. And somebody was basically requesting that, why not give the Andros the Adder? Because there's nothing too, extraordinary about it in terms of its weapons and stuff. But it would basically be, it's as conjectural as the Federation gunboat, which the Feds are going to have. So why not let the Andros out there?
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I think that makes sense. They haven't. ADB hasn't released the gunboats for the FedCom yet. I forget.
So far, what they've done is there's playtest rules in Captain Bob 54, and there's a couple of playtest ship cards as well. So if you still have your copy of CL 54 lying around somewhere,
yeah, I do.
You can actually see them in there, and so in near the back of the issue, you should see the sample ship cards. And near the front of the issue, you should see the sample rules from.
Okay. Oh, there they are. IC gunboat. Hydrogen Harrier gunboat. Okay, G1 gunboat and needle. Okay, so let's... Yeah, cool. People. see that. And then there's two. So they have to see all four. Which is interesting. I know they were debating on the movement cost. Because they're originally like 1/5, which is an awkward.
Well, bear in mind that in SSE, I'm trying to remember actually, there's still a little bit of housekeeping that even a gunboat has to pay for, right? Like it's got like, I think the life support is cheaper because it's just
life support is free. There is no life support
or something.
The reason why there's no life support is because they're all in spacesuits. There's no atmosphere,
But there's still a field cost, like there's some other kind of like payments that you have to make, whatever. So for the in FedCom, you don't need to worry about that.
Right.
So you can basically get away with a bit more in terms of even if the movement cost is 1/4 instead of 1/5, like you're probably not losing that much.
Right, and. Obviously, the one thing that, as anyone who was watching the video, and I'm sure you know, Gary, which is, as you pointed out, the in SFB, you have the warp booster packs in the PFs, which are important because of if you hit the warp booster packs, it can cause more damage. While in FedCom, they removed the whole idea of a Fed booster pack. Of course, also it.
So yeah, so
trim down
I guess
the,
for now. They haven't really talked about doing any bundle tenders. So any deployments of the PS, which would be used for standard combat PS as well, it seems. You'd be taking them casually, just kind of point fillers.
I disagree with this. I totally disagree with this. The only thing I disagree about...
Well, I mean, for the first product, at least.
Okay, what was that? I'm sorry.
So, like, there's only going to be... There's only room for so many ship cards in a given product.
Oh, agreed.
So, it seems that the plan for, like, phase one is to give you the standard combat bundles. And then that's it, basically. And maybe if things in the future... Now, I don't want to speak for ADB on this, but in theory... Maybe somewhere down the road they could do the gunboat tenders, but they probably wouldn't go too crazy with some of the mission variants. I mean, I think the workboats would be useful, if only just as another option for the convoy raids and stuff. But like you wouldn't expect things like, there's no mines in SSFC, so you wouldn't have to get mines for your PS.
Right.
But yeah, all of the mission variants they wouldn't show up in the same way. But
I was just looking at the cards for the gumbos, and one thing I disagree with, which is currently it seems to indicate both squadron scale and fleet scale are the same ship.
You take half as many.
Yeah, I totally disagree with them. I think basically they should just be available in squadron scale, and that's it. I know the whole idea of basically, you take less in fleet scale, but at the same time, a frigate at fleet scale. It's around the same amount number of boxes as a gunboat. So what's the difference? What is the penalty for taking possibly more powerful gunboats versus an actual frigate? At fleet scale, that is.
Well, I guess there have been a couple of sample interceptors floating around, so I guess you could have it that you take interceptors rather than PFs if you're doing a fleet scale battle. But I don't know how many people actually do fleet scale. Not to say that they don't,
right.
But I don't know like how much of a point, how much in the terms of the broader audience it is relative to squadron scale. Like mm-hmm. maybe it is. Because the thing as well is that there's other units like fighters, for example. They don't give you a half cut down fighter. They just it's the same fighter. Like for the Hydrant Stingers, for example, they just give you half as many.
Right.
So it's a fudge, but
it, agreed.
The order works in the end. I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, and overall, I think the whole idea of fleet scale was a failure overall. Because my understanding is that the fleet scale was designed to have it so that you could actually play a larger fleet, and that really, and therefore be able to have reason why you want a larger fleet is so that you could play a larger fleet in a short period of time, or the same time as a smaller fleet, you know, and that just didn't work because of course, in addition to reducing the defense, you also reduced the offense by half, and so it didn't change the actual equation at all. Because the only way, if you want to speed up games, have ships die faster. That's the way to speed up a game. So, they didn't do that with fleet scale. They just shrunk everything, which is understandable. I truly do. The only reason I even would possibly use fleet scale is to have a ship that was never designed and use a fleet scale of that same ship, which will reduce the BPV if you want to try to use a BPV versus BPV combat. So, and overall, I don't think many people actually play fleet
even
scale.
Even in SFB, if you look at the cadet scale ships, I mean, they're approximately half the size of a full SFB. But there's still like an audience for them in terms of having to teach the way the game works.
Right. So, oh, agreed. I agree. When it comes to those, it's good for learning the game and possibly even using fleet scale for helping to learn the game. But it's not, but as I said, I think the original reason for it was to reduce time. So it sped up the play time of the game so you can play larger fleets. And I think that's why it's called fleet scale. And that part of it failed. Yeah, I know, and thank you, Chris, for sending me that. Chris is pointing out that FedCom is better than Starfire if you want SFB ships. And Chris sent me basically the first edition Starfire, electronic edition, which is interesting. Which is, I think, a lot better than the later versions of Starfire, just because later versions of Starfire were a lot more complicated when it comes to building the actual ships. Combat was relatively simple. It was the building, which is where it's like playing F&E, you know. Though F&E is a little different in that you have a set schedule and you don't actually design the ships. In the case of Starfire, you actually are designing your ships.
So yeah. Anyway, I guess one final thing I was trying to get to is I've been thinking about because you may recall that in Modern Omega 5, there's a bunch of gunboats that are given for the Omega Empire.
Right.
But the engines that they use are very different because they're volatile warp engines. So they don't have warp booster packs, but the individual engines are bigger. And they have an afterburner function, which is kind of like a knockoff version of Orion engine doubling.
Right.
But it means that because there's no more booster packs and the engines are twice the size, if you were bringing them to FedCom, I was thinking that you'd probably need to give them a move cost of a quarter rather than 1/8, because that would more fairly, that would avoid you having to chop up the SSD to create the SIP card, if that makes sense. And it would basically balance the unit better, because, I mean, they're already going to be bigger and more expensive than Alpha Gunboats. But that's okay, because you'd still have the rules in terms of how many per flotilla you'd take. To be honest, though, I actually think the Omega Gunboats are way more interesting than the Alpha ones, because, I mean, the Alpha ones, they're all the same size. I mean, they're all the same engines. They're all the same flotilla numbers and stuff. I mean, they just, they're much more, I mean, cookie cutter, if that makes sense. With Omega, there's so much more variety in terms of what they do. Like, if you look at a Drex Gunboat compared to a Misron or an anyone, like, there's a lot more kind of ins and outs of them in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree to a certain degree that the PFs, when it comes to the Alpha Octant, are a little more cookie cutter. But I'm thinking about the Zenning Needles, which had, you know, different types and so forth. I'm not sure that you can call those cookie cutter completely. But I agree, you know, for the most part. On that, I know there's an issue with damage allocation and PFs in the Alpha Octant, because I remember talking to Aaron Staley about that issue, and he talked to Steve Petrick, and that never got resolved. So I'm assuming that's still left unresolved. And don't ask me what it was, because I don't remember exactly what it was. Yes, Iggy, we were talking about Omega again. Big surprise. But, yeah, I agree that the gunboats are a little more, in the Omega Octant, are a little more interesting than the PFs in the Alpha Octant. I'll agree with you there.
By the way, I mean, I'm still looking forward to seeing what the FedCom Alpha gunboats will be like. I suppose the big thing will be for anyone who's a Federation player, just bear in mind that the Infed Commander and the Feds are not going to get the F-111. They're just going to get the Thunderbolt PF instead.
Right, right. Yeah. Be honest, I don't look forward to adding fighters to FedCom. I really don't. That's because of the great thing about FedCom is that you didn't have all those stupid drones, and that's the one thing that the fighters introduced in SFB, which is this huge amount of drones that you could actually launch at one time. So anyway, I think we'll wrap up with that. Gary, it was a pleasure. Thank you for stopping by. I was concerned there for a little bit because I saw you come and then drop off. I'm glad you were able to stay.
So, thank you, and have a good night.
Okay, you too. Okay, bye. So, had a nice little discussion there about things from the Planet Killer to the friends of the Frax, from the Prax to the Lyrax to the Andrax, and all the funny ones, all the funny ones in between. You know, and as I said, you know, I like the idea of the Frax and the Britannians, and the whole idea of, you're not, everything isn't designed for firing forward. That's designed for firing maximum capability is off to the sides. So it changes your tactics. But, you know, I never got around to completely saying, which is, of course, that the weird part is that the shields are not set up for broadside combat overall. Yeah, they're all 24, but the main shield, the shield number one is 30. That's the one that you have the most you know, is the biggest shield, which is interesting because of I understand that it's it makes it hard to a certain degree if you have your shield number one down because that's the way you're facing. But when it comes to the side, having the shield number one really doesn't affect your ability to fire your weapons, which is and also one of those things that you want the person's shield number one to disappear. That and, of course, turning, because it forces your opponent to try to keep where he wants to go, you know, kind of try to get that shield away from the opponent. So, anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.